This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Audible.com, offering the largest selection of audiobooks for your smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more information. And if you'd like to help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day, consider becoming a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm and find out how you can become part of the team. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
I'm Jeff Combs. I'm everywhere on Star Trek, and you keep tuning in to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 190, a very special show. This show is going to be an unusual Ready Room. Instead of our usual news format followed by a feature discussion, we're just going to talk about the breaking news of the day, CBS's announcement that there is a new Star Trek series coming in January 2017. And to help me do that, I'm joined by none other than Dr. Trek himself, my friend Larry Nemechek. Larry, welcome back.
Wow. Wow, what a day. Wow. And I must say, this is like about the 47th special Ready Room we've done this year, Chris. But
It is. We've done quite a few of them.
Well, but I much prefer the tone of today than I have some of the ones we've done this year with Harv and Grace Lee and Leonard. This is finally both upbeat and forward-looking. So, you know.
Exactly. And you were just here on the last Ready Room, so you thought you were off the hook for a little while, and then here you are again.
Well, I've been through two hurricanes in Houston since we talked last or something, so it feels like it's been... But yes, that's true. For those keeping score at home, this is back-to-back. We're going to start a serial arc here. We're going to start a three-part show. And no, I'm kidding.
Well, Larry, I'll tell you my story for today. It was interesting because, of course, I live in Tokyo, so it's nighttime here while it's daytime there. And I was sleeping soundly. It's getting kind of cold here at night now, so I was really comfortable snoozing away. I woke up this morning, and I have all these notifications on my phone, and there are these cryptic messages from Matthew and Norm and Char, who are the other three executive producers here on the network. And they're saying things like, wow, this is big news, and how are we going to cover this news? And I wonder if Chris knows about the news. We'll have to wait till Chris wakes up. And then I check and I have notifications from you on Twitter and also email, and you're saying check your email, and no one is saying what this news is. So I don't really quite know what's going on other than it must be something big.
It's like Christmas in Japan in November or something. Oh.
I guess. And so I finally woke up enough to check StarTrek.com, and I saw the big banner, new series, January 2017. So that was
and you said,
really exciting.
Oh my God, now even StarTrek.com is misquoting Larry.
Wow, yeah, is that Starfleet Intelligence?
Yeah, they knew.
Spying on Larry again?
You know, even an idiot clock is right twice a day. Okay, a stop clock, I guess I should say, yeah.
So here we are, so we're going to talk about this, and of course, you were planning to get some work done that's been backlogged as you've been in Houston. As we talked about on the last show, you were going to go to Houston. And you get back and this happened. So what was your day like, Larry?
Well, I just woke up and saw the alerts on my phone and I went, really? No, this is somebody else is getting punked by an idiot blogger now. That's right. True. I really thought that. But the headlines did not say, you know, poor stuck schmuck person is being wrongly quoted saying Star Trek is back. It was all about CBS announces. And I thought, well, there you go. Well, there you go. It's really, because the first thought is, well, how about that? The day is here. You know, the announcement day anyway is here.
Yeah.
And then everything spins off. And I guess we're going to talk about that. But, you know, like who and what and when and where, you know, physically where and virtually where. And all the, you know, all the basic questions that you have. And we've got a few of those answers, but very few. And we've got Jesus Christ will have 3 and 6 and 9 and 12 and 15 months to, you know, talk over it.
Yeah.
But hopefully it'll be
a
fun ride.
Time to talk about it.
Fun ride. But this is something we've been wanting. We've been talking about for so long.
Yes.
Get the damn thing back on TV. And here we go. TV in a matter of, you know, idiom. But episodic Trek back. Get episodic Trek back.
Well, you and I have talked about this many times on the Ready Room over the past year or maybe even 2 years, kind of speculating on when Star Trek would come back to television, what form it would take, and how it would be delivered.
Well, actually, there was a poll that actually said 47% of the world's population had been talking about when and where.
At least.
Yes,
at least. I think so, yeah. So when CBS announced All Access a while back, I think you and I both felt that there's a pretty good chance that Star Trek is going to end up being on All Access because, you know, they used Voyager to launch UPN. They were going to use Phase 2 to launch a new...
Oh, we've got all kinds of historical precedent. In fact, it's kind of been interesting today to watch the tweets and Facebook posts and things from people. You know, it's kind of like the sedimentary layer of the geologic calendar. How far back people have been a fan by what they remember. You know,
right.
So
the Trekkie geological calendar.
Yes,
that's what we're looking
at. The Trekological calendar, I guess.
Trekological, yes. So it's no surprise, but we'll talk about distribution sometime during our discussion today. I don't want to really focus on distribution all that much. Before I sat down to record with you, Matthew, Norm, and Mike Schindler being from Commentary Trek Stars and Standard Orbit, our original series show, we got together for a quick emergency hyperchannel recording, and we talked about the setting, the tone, the distribution, the creative team, Kurtzman, all sorts of things, so people can go listen to that, but hopefully you and I will talk about some other topics. And I'd especially like to hear you talk a little bit about the stories that broke the news initially.
Well, not in detail. I mean, the first link I saw, and, you know, sorry whoever sent it to me, I don't remember now, was the Hollywood Reporter story. And when I see Hollywood Reporter, I'm thinking, okay, we're probably beyond the Starfleet Intelligence blog level here, hopefully. And it was pretty, you know, quickly based. And then I saw, a little bit later, I saw Deadline that I have to get used to. I know they've been there for years, but getting beyond Variety and Hollywood Reporter for breaking entertainment stories. And Deadline's story to me was a little bit more nuts and bolts. It was a little more understandable to a lay audience and had a little more, I had a few more, answers down there. They all talk about how it's Kurtzman's, you know, not bad robot, but his production company and his co-partner, and they've got deals existing already with CBS. But the biggest thing about January 17 for a launch, and it took a while to get this through our heads. But the fact that basically they're going to show the pilot on CBS proper, this took 3 or 4 readings for me to understand it. But now,
yeah, is that what they mean? Because that's not how I understood it. I understood it like there was going to be a preview of the series on CBS proper, but the pilot was going to be on All Access.
Okay, well, now I'm reading that. It could be a preview broadcast like they previewed Sesame Street on all 3 regular networks before it started on PBS. Yes, I actually remember watching that. This is sad. But you're right. That could be a special, like, here's what's coming, which they have done. They did back in the day with, like, Next Generation. They would package an hour special that was clips and interviews and stuff and do that. So that could very well be what that is. But basically, they want to get some bang for the buck because they know that'll pull in ratings, but it'll also be a great launch, as if anybody left in the universe won't have known about it by then. And then... And then the run on CBS All Access, which they launched. You know, and a few months back, they pulled Star Trek off of free. You know, used to be able to watch the Star Trek, the original series, at least, on StarTrek.com. And it went away. And they you know, people, oh, now I've got to pay for it. People are just watching, you know, Netflix or one of the other streams if they don't have the discs or whatever. But they're the thing that drove me up, we got into this. And after you see that they're hedging on things like format and, you know, what time stream and all of that. And even how big, I realized later on, didn't even say how big the order was. Is it 13? Is it 10 or 13 or 20 or what? But basically, the underlying thing here, it says that Kurtzman, they've been meeting with writers for the past few months. CBS Television Studios is the studio, which is funny. It's like that's the renamed old Paramount TV division, and then it was Paramount CBS. And then to avoid confusion and totally brand it CBS, they just dropped the Paramount TV studio from the site. But technically, this is the same arm that made Next Gen DS9, Voyager, and Enterprise. It's, you know, the descendant of that. Mm-hmm. And it'll be, they're going to work on international distribution. TV and multiple platforms, it says, around the world. And that David Stapp, president of CBS Television Studios, the head of the television studio, is talking about it and saying all the platitudes and all the things. But basically, the bottom line here is the decision to bring Star Trek back to episodic format, or i.e. TV, loosely, is business-driven. It's not like somebody walked in. I don't think Alex Kurtzman walked up one day and said, damn it, if you don't let me do a Star Trek TV series in January 17 to debut, I'm going to tear up my contract and leave the studio. This is really a business-driven decision where they said, we need to, and here's where we get into the history, but it's like, we need to pump up CBS All Access. What is the best tool in our CBS? What's the best arrow in our quiver? You know, best tool in our box. It's Star Trek. And here's where history is. What did Paramount want to launch its fourth network with in 1977? Star Trek. What did they think they had to answer Star Wars with when they were madly looking for a sci-fi band? It's Star Trek. What did UPN want to launch? You know, about the only time I think that Star Trek was going to launch of its own oomph was when they said in 86, okay, it's been 20 years. We need to put more Star Trek out there. And then they went and found and put a syndicated network together for 1 hour drama, which was, you know, unheard of, and made it work because it was Star Trek driving it. And that was one case where, like, the story, the content led the business side. But everything else, including launching UPN, you know, with Voyager and Star Trek there. And I thought of this just recently. The whole move toward the remasters was, you know, that was led by CBS's TV distribution, who were in charge of syndicating the shows. And it was a little bit like, hey, we're tired of 79 original episodes. It was like, gosh, the digital era is going on. It would be great if we could dust off the original series and give it a new look and up our revenue. You know, if we spend X amount, can we do a formula and make X amount? Both with, you know, and factor into the formula, selling it for station, you know, broadcast, and then also having the DVDs and the rental and whatever coming along. So that was another case where it was kind of a tie, but it also kind of pioneered. They spent tons on the remastering, more than anybody had ever. I don't have the number handy, but no other TV project had ever been treated the way the original series was, and doing original, you know, visual effects. But it was all because they felt like they needed to up the game. They didn't have to do a new show. They didn't have to hire new cast, new writers, new designers. They had so TV distribution could do it, take an existing property and, you know, shine it up shiny, and then, you know, did Next Generation later for the same reason. But we've had all these places in history where, for one degree or another, business, if not leading it, was also pioneering. Even like I said, Next Generation was led by the content, but it still was a pioneering paradigm of something quick, a word with P. You know, but the business end of it, and today's announcement is clearly the business, really, because they don't know who's going to write the pilot. They don't know. They haven't at least announced. I don't know if they're dancing around about it or not, but they haven't announced any of those format content things. That's, you know, half of what the internet's blowing up about today. But that's one thing that really struck me when I read this, was this is a business first, content coming later.
So talking about this being a business thing, because obviously they want to make money off of it, the final line of the press release specifies, the new television series is not related to the upcoming feature film Star Trek Beyond, which is scheduled to be distributed by Paramount in summer 2016. What do you make of this? Is this a sign to you that they're not going to go in the Abramsverse direction? Or is this just trying to clarify for people that this is really not connected? We're doing our own TV thing. They're doing their own movie thing. Or is there something else to it?
There may be different levels to that. And you're right. It might be purely it might be some kind of a business. You know, we keep talking about the non-compete clause or whatever, and supposedly
may or may not exist.
Right, and may or not be about to expire or is expiring, and that may be what this is about or whatever. I mean, I know it exists. The whole thing about if there's a term or if it's year by year and all that's up in the air. But but that could purely be a thinly disguised legal line. You know,
yeah, could be.
It could just be for information's sake. It could be for expectations, just to get it out there for whatever side of the fence you're on, or if you care or not. And, you know, related to is a very vague form. Related to, as in, don't look for Kirk, Spock, and McCoy in the JJ verse or otherwise? Or is it a, we're going to be in the JJ verse, but we just won't be on the Enterprise? Which, of course, that's what would happen. Yeah, I mean, the option that this is going to be, I mean, and then we get back. So then we're like, well, could it be Prime or could it be? Alex Kurtzman obviously wrote 09, was in the Supreme Court, the think tank. But those weren't unilateral decisions. I mean, I don't know until we get a chance to say. Maybe they've made a decision and they're guarding. Maybe this, there's a big chunk of me that just thinks totally on gut level, this is all up in the air. That business drove this. They've been talking to people, pitching. Like I said a long time ago, there's resumes in a drawer somewhere and no one's hiring right now. But I think I've said this more than once and hopefully I wrote it down, that it's one of those things where people are just kind of throwing their resume on the pile and it's like, we'll call you when we have an opening. Well, guess what? The opening as of here, apparently the last 2 or 3 months, the job came open. And Now we've pulled the resumes out of the drawer. We're going through them and maybe some new people have called in. You know, we'll get all this eventually, all the making of and all that will come out at some point. But my point is, this is a little bit like three doctors in 3 years on Next Generation. I can't imagine that, and I could be wrong, because I'm really hoping that the overriding thing, okay, I'm sorry to split up this. I was thinking today, it used to be that fans used to love when it was all Paramount. People would love to talk about Paramount monolithically. Oh, Paramount this and Paramount that, and Paramount's so stupid, and why don't they know what the fan want, and blah, blah, blah. And we got to a point in the 90s where all the interests aligned to where enough people, a little bit like the fanboys and girls coming up to the writer's ranks, there were enough people coming up to the office ranks who were fans, like our good friend John Van Sitters and many more, who know the property, and they know that if we make it right, they won't just come, but they'll spend more money. You know, it's like everybody will be happy. Better Trek will be more profitable for us. And I would hope that whoever's running the ship right now at the key places of making decisions and hiring will realize, and at this point, with 10 years of J.J. Trek out there, it may be something. But I just can't imagine going a third way. It's like in the third season of Next Gen. Do we get a third Doctor or do we go back to Gates? You know what I'm saying?
So you're suggesting a third path, not the Abramsverse, not returning to the Prime timeline as we think of it, but something else?
No, I'm suggesting that I don't think they'll go a third way. I think it will be one of the two. Of course, I don't think they will branch out and do a third one. If you're talking about, you want to talk about confusion, you want to talk about having to restart.
Yeah, that would be very confusing.
Right. So, and again, we've only had 4, and by then, 6 hours in the JJ verse. People talk, we've been living with it for 7 years, but it only equates to, I think I've said this before, 6 hours to be emotionally invested in it. Now, there's been the comics, there's been some novels and all that, but it's nothing like, filmed canon or filmed in your face.
You know what we call that prior to 1999, don't you?
What?
We call that Star Wars.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So it's the same thing, really. There are 3 films, right? Up until the new trilogy.
12 hours, or I would say, three films. And now even then, six films in the end, 12 hours of live and 2 seasons of anime.
Yeah.
And they're about to make good on finally, trying to even up the score.
Right.
But I mean, no, I hope that they look at the body. I mean, I was kidding that I was tweeting some things out just as they came to me. And there's so many angles on this. We talked about this.
I thought you were talking about Landru for a minute there.
What?
You said you hoped they would look at the body.
The body. Yes. Are you of the body or are you JJ-verse? The alt-verse. I would hope they would look at the great body of the hours of content and all. And it reminded me, at one point, I just wanted to say, let's just start a hashtag. You're like, Prime is not scary. Hashtag Prime is not hard. Because it's not. I think we get any of the book authors in here, they do it all the time and tell a wonderful story, that's woven in that I think most people could probably pick up the old bugaboo about we can't have it be so involved that somebody can't walk in the theater and lose it. Well, you're talking about a different vibe. I mean, as we've been saying for years, the difference between TV and movie on one of the levels is audience and audience expectation. And now the way people can watch and rewatch and pick it up and, it's the universe of TV watching is totally different than it was even when Enterprise was on. It was just starting to move that direction. And it is so different. And people are used to watching things on their mobile. People are used to, you know, Aaron Harvey was, he was citing a poll in one of the board just before we started recording this, about 48% of millennials and Gen Xers and young baby boomers never see a real TV and they never watch their content on a real TV anymore. You know, it's all mobile or whatever. And, and that's all recognizing that. So it's out there to play with. But I think it'll be, I'm just, you know, me personally, I'm hoping it'll be Prime because I think that's just where most people can be invested. And the fact that you may not have watched that much Prime has nothing to do with it. And some people, so many JJ generation people have gone back to get invested in the, all the other series that are out there. Because
see, that's the thing. It's out there. Like people watch the JJ films and then they go back and they get into Star Trek and the Prime universe. Because people say that, well, people will be confused because right now they're familiar with the Abramsverse Star Trek that they see in the theaters. And then what's this on TV? But I think that those fans are perfectly fine coming in and getting into a bigger story. And people who don't know either one, it doesn't matter. They're going to get into what you give them. But the fan base, the existing fan base, is, I think, overwhelmingly in favor of Prime Universe.
Of course.
And I don't think that CBS should alienate the fan base by putting this long-awaited new series out, but doing it in a timeline that a majority of fans dislike.
Well, I would think, and again, this is where I said it was interesting how we used to bash, you know, Big Bad Paramount. And now people try to bash Big Bad CBS or whatever, not realizing that there's different arms, right?
Right.
Sometimes the competing interests. But when the interests of the corporation and the interests of the fan base got aligned in the 70s and everybody was happy, or in the 70s, I'm sorry, in the 90s and the aughts, and even in this tug of war that was happening, and most people didn't know it until later on, but this tug of war between Bad Robot and Paramount and CBS over what direction and the fate and what would happen with the existing catalog. And finally, CBS digging in, it really coalesced with, you know, it lined up with what most fans wanted. The corporate and the fan wishes were in alignment. CBS didn't want to lose the value of the catalog, and the fans didn't want to lose the value of their invested, you know, interest in the franchise to throw it away. And they were actually on the same alignment. And I have to think what you were just saying there, why would CBS... you know, not just disrespect the existing fan base, but disrespect the profit they would lose from suddenly devaluing, you know, why do you want to keep enriching the investment in that 737 hours? Or do you want to start this long, slow decline as people got old and died and forgot about it? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So to me, it makes more business sense to go back to Prime.
Yeah, for me too. It makes more business sense.
As well as the fact. So once again, they're in alignment, see?
Especially when you want... Your model is to get people to pay $5.99 per month to watch Star Trek because most people are going to get CBS All Access because of Star Trek in this situation. You need to tap into that established fan base who's just dying to see the show first before you bring in those new fans.
Well, right.
And so you need to give them something that they're truly going to want to pay for.
And
that's just my opinion.
No, I mean, I don't understand what the business sense, and hey, like I have an MBA, no, that's obvious, but I would think that the business sense would, once again, align with, you know, that. Yeah. And I don't know, I mean, like, it was curious, so I was reading the comments with this deadline story, and I think I even tweeted on that. It's a good reminder that no matter, in fact, I said, just like religion and politics, people make the mistake of just assuming that everyone else thinks the same way they do about Star Trek,
Star Trek.
Because you'll see, I was reading the comments there, and it was everything from, oh, great, this is wonderful, to I'm so suspicious. You know, oh, they're going to muck it up. Oh, this is so great after 10 years. I'm not about to pay five or whatever, you know, a monthly fee I'll pay anything. Just get it back on. You know, so it's all over the map. So...
I would like to say something about the people because I've seen many people who say, "Oh, yes, they're going to muck this up. They're going to ruin Star Trek." I think that's a matter of opinion, right? I think whatever they put on the screen, I think it's going to be well done, whether it's Prime Universe or whether it's Abramsverse timeline. I think they're going to put a good product out there. It just depends on whether you think it's a good product by your own taste, right?
Right.
Like visually. The writing, the acting, I'm sure is going to be well produced. I don't think they're going to muck it up in that sense. But if you dislike the Abrams verse and they go that route, you're going to be unhappy.
Well, yeah, and you might be unhappy if they, you know, it might, if it's a case of, you know, if they build it well, they will come. Then yeah. Maybe we'll have a way to either undo some of the dissatisfaction with the JJ verse and go that direction. What I don't know. It, you know, with the accumulation of hours, when you have the natural accumulation of a series, that's just going to be the proof in the pudding. And seeing, you know, what the quality is. You're right. But here's the fundamental difference between TV and movies as an origin point, not like, oh, the movies are a reward for a job well done, casts, you know, kind of a thing, is a movie, a motion picture, is a one-shot deal. The crews, the designers, the writing, you know, it's just one or two or three guys and a director, where the director is the auteur, not the producers. TV is the producer medium. So you've got a much smaller, you know, the studio says, okay, here's contract, top of pyramid producer or director. And then it, you know, it goes down, but it's a tiny pyramid. A series is a much bigger project, whether it's 10 or 13 hours or they go 20 or whatever it's going to be on this, you know, streaming model, however they budget that out. You've got a lot more, and the fact that it's TV, and TV seems to be like just layers of notes givers. But you're going to have a lot more hands in the pie. Although, you know, Alex Kurtzman is a pretty dynamic guy. That's one thing that we don't get in the press release, is whether he's the showrunner or he's just EPing it like a Dick Wolf and going to hire the showrunners to actually be hands-on with it. We don't know that yet either. But either way, not as a denigration, but there will be more hands and more, you know, for lack of a better word, committees on this. And there may be even more leavening with the series than there was with the motion picture. And a motion picture just comes across as a one-shot, one-stab thing. People think more broadly when they're thinking about a series and multiple episodes, and we've got to have this story go along, and we're talking about coming up with multiple situations and what will lend itself to doing, you know, 10 or 13 or 20 hours or whatever. So the whole mindset of that evolution is different. And I'm just thinking that there'll be more opinions taken into account when they do decide this. I don't, you know, who knows? They've been taking pitches. It could be the strength and dynamicism and the charisma of who walked in, kind of what I said before. It'll depend on what's the motivation of the person making the pitch and what's the strength, and is it the fact that they're an old fan themselves, or they've got smart people on their team who are fans, or what? And those are knowns. We don't, you know, Rumsfeld, those are unknown knowns right now. But I just see, I'm happier staking Star Trek's future to a series than I am to a one-shot movie out of the blue.
I'm much
more comfortable with that.
What do you think the chances are of them bringing back any writers from past Star Trek? Or do you think that they really want to just have a clean slate here?
I think the chances are better now than they were 10 years ago or whatever, 8 years ago. Because we've been through the hoops and the ringers. Again, movie versus television, it's everybody has to get a little up here on the reality and the edges. And it's just the way it's financed and the way of what it is. It's a one-shot, 2 hours, big screen, you know, blast versus something that's going to be built to drip out once, not drip, but, you know, emerge once a week on an elongated schedule, an elongated arc. And it's got to be built for the road, you know. And again, it's all going to be a series of decisions. We know now that it's Kurtzman and his producer partner. It's who they hire in what positions. Are they going to go after some? I mean, I would hope that. I would hope the design staff. I would hope that it's somewhere in the writers, if not someone who is a veteran, you know, with their resume, then at least someone who is, you know, loud, proud, and proclaims their Trekness, and their professional writer who is also a fan, and you know, is permeated with it one way or the other. I would hope they'd be open to that, because you're going to have, I don't know what the typical staff size is on a streaming show. I mean, in the 90s, they would, you know, there'd be anywhere from 5, 6, 7 staff writers, potentially including the showrunner. So I don't know. I would hope at least one of those would be somebody with a resume, you know, and certainly a lot of them have raised their hand and said, You know, and I've had a chance to ask a lot of them these in the fallow years here. You know, Ron and Ira, Brian Fuller has publicly pitched. I know Mike Sussman would love to jump in. So, you know, yeah. I think you go down the list. All those guys would love to be. And I don't think they would be. I think a few years back, I think they were. In fact, I was disappointed. Ira and Ron were both seemed to be intimidated by it. But I kind of shamed them a little bit. But I, when I just publicly, I mean, just privately talked. But I think any of them would relish the chance to jump in. And this platform, I think the fact that it's, again, it's less risky for everyone from the network to the names involved on down not to be a network show fighting for Nielsen ratings.
Yeah, that was one point I made.
That takes the pressure off.
Talking on Hyper Channel. Yeah.
Yeah.
That, so speaking of, you know, you said you're not sure how large the staff would be on a streaming show. Of course, overall, it's still produced as a TV show, as we would know it traditionally, but the number of episodes could differ. And this is something that we haven't talked about yet, even earlier today on Hyper Channel. Do you think they're going to do like a 22-episode season like they were doing in the fourth season of Enterprise, or a shorter, like a 12 or a 16-episode season like some
streaming
shows
are? Well, I don't know. And here's the thing. We're talking about the channel delivery landscape is different. And, you know, these are the things that I said this a while ago. There's all these issues that, like, you and I and all the pundits and all the fans, you know, online or on podcasts or sitting around their club rooms or their con late night parties or whatever in the Q&A line, you know, at cons. Everyone's been debating these points for ages, and now suddenly it's out of our little dark circles, and now it's mainstream news and mainstream speculation. Yeah. But, yeah. You know, whether we don't know how long the season is, but here's the thing. When we're looking at Orange is the New Black or House of Cards or some of the hits, the high-profile hits that have gotten critical acclaim, you know, for Netflix and the other streaming series and some of the other ones that are adopt. I keep saying Netflix, but there's four or five, you know, platforms now. Was Amazon Prime and some more.
Yeah, yeah. Amazon is even making TV shows now.
Right, so, there's a couple more. But we are talking Star Trek, and we are talking science fiction, so the budget pressure will be higher to budget something higher. Now, I don't know, you know, the Next Gen, that's one thing that Rick Berman always did insist on, was that we'd talk about how their sets were better than any other sets on drama. They didn't just paint forms, they actually had rounded moldings on, you know, sets, and how the orchestras would be a full orchestra. Star Trek was like the last show on TV to put a full orchestra scoring a score every episode. You know, they weren't even doing library stuff like the original series did. Mm-hmm. And that might be a factor. You know, this will all be a formula they will sit down and compute, just like the original, you know, Paramount bean counter sat down and said, we'll spend X amount and we'll do 26 shows for 7 seasons, no more, no less. Unless the world blows up. And there are bean counters and people doing logarithms right now to figure out what's going to be the budget, because it's sci-fi. And so they may be shorter than what the other, you know, typical streaming seasons are, just because they intend to spend more per episode. Or maybe they're just going to lump that and say, hell, it's Star Trek.
Yeah.
We know we're going to get more back on the back end, so we're not going to worry about it. We're going to do a full whatever, 20 or maybe it's, I don't know. We'll see. But those are the factors. Those are the factors that are going to go into it, you know.
Yeah, but you see more shows these days that only go like 12 episodes.
Well, right, right. I mean, that, 16 you know, episodes. I used to call it, it's either the HBO model or the BBC model or whatever. But
well, the BBC model is like 4.
Well,
that's, I think it's more like, well, 4 to 8. Yeah, quite short. So, but a lot of their shows look more like movies, right?
But yeah, that shortened season. But no more 20. I mean, the 26 show, all the guys
there
talk
won't
about
be 26.
You know, we go 22 now. But the killers, and I said if you took away the 4 clinkers each season, you know that psych wise that shows it should.
Well, as Matthew and I talk about on the Orb, as great as Deep Space Nine season 6 is, that season ends with Prophet and Lace and Time's Orphan. To get them to 26 episodes, take those 2 episodes out, and overall the season would be even stronger. So,
well, that's one of the things that would strike me when I was first working on the Companion and talking to Michael and Jerry and, you know, Ron and Renee and Brandon and those guys. They would talk about how they would hit that seventh inning stretch and just be exhausted when they were working on the 26 episode shows, and how they, you know, and then they kind of, then everybody gets a breath. Okay, we're going to coast to the summer, summeritis, you know, get to hiatus. But how that fatigue just it doesn't matter how big a head start, it doesn't matter how determined they are, after they get 10 or 12 or 13 shows in, then they just hit that wall and it's hard to do it. And it's just amazing. But that's what the bean counters told them to do. And heaven forbid, it wasn't worth it to do, you know, eight seasons of 20 shows, because then you've got the actors and everybody else's, you know, yearly things are kicking in.
Yeah, right.
No, we've got to cram them in. We're not going to come back tomorrow. We're going to work 18 hours today instead of working two, you know, 8 hour days or whatever. So it's again, that's where the accountants take over. And that's good, but that's going to drive eventually the storytelling and the arcs and what format are they going to do? And, you know, are they going to do a American Horror Story? Are they going to, I forget the term, where we change casts every year? Who the hell knows what they're going to do? You know, forget serialized versus standalone. Are they going to go wacko like that and be modern?
Well, what would you think about that? Because a number of fans, I think even in the Babel Conference, it's been brought up before our listeners group on Facebook. What if they did something like that, where each season is maybe 12 episodes and each season is telling a completely different story set within the Star Trek universe? Would that be of interest to you?
Well, I think so. I mean, that would be one way of getting, you know, people that are arguing about where to go with this. Here, because here's the thing. Next Generation was the big gamble, but it broke open the paradigm of what we thought of Star Trek. And even though you had the pissed off, very vocal, you know, 5% of fandom or 8% of fandom who just did not want to watch a bald French captain and a crew that was not Kirk, Spock, McCoy, how could that be Star Trek? Yeah. You know, that was the mindset. That's what Star Trek was. And it wasn't like, no, it's Gene Roddenberry's universe. And that, now we take that for granted. But at the time, that was just like revolutionary. But it was brilliant because it didn't just set up Next Generation. Now you could go to any, like I said today, any corner of the sandbox, and even on whatever level, if you want to talk about parallel universes or time frames in the same universe. So now it's wide open. So as the shows got successful and they talked and the studio wanted more Star Trek, and we had DS9. Part of what was limiting against and why Enterprise was really a big jump and a gamble was they just got so amortized. You know, they just had sets and costumes and props that were all from the same era. I remember wishing they would do, I didn't call it a prequel, but I was wishing for ages for a founding of the Federation Romulan War show. But I never thought they were going to be able to eat all the props, costumes, set that they had, and go and totally design all a whole new era of everything, uniforms and props and sets. That's a chunk of change. And when you've accumulated it and got all those warehouses full of stuff, and so much of your budget, you can just go and pull stuff and repaint and repurpose. That saves a ton of money, and you get way more bang for your buck, and that's all great. So the beauty of this shorter season, A, it's sad that the warehouses are cleaned out, and there, I should say, there's a ton of stuff still saved back, but the economic budget force is not going to be pushing to keep some. We're starting over from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And since there's not a big investment, maybe that will be a liberating thing to doing that, because I can totally, you're right. People have said, let's do a Klingon show. Let's do a show in this period. Let's do a show on an outpost. Let's do a show on Earth. I mean, you know, and with CGI and with digital stuff, we can do stuff that, you know, Gene could only dream about doing.
Yeah.
You know, the original series, like, we'll never go to Earth. We're not going to show that. Well, we've since gone to Earth, like on DS9 and several times. But that's a thing that may affect that. I thought of that today. The fact that they don't have this huge backlog and catalog of investment, they may choose to be footloose and fancy free and do those limited arcs like that. But the downside of that is they won't have the casting. If they have a cast for each show and there's no overhanging character, overarching character of as they do that, it'll be hard. Is Star Trek ready among all these other changes and shifts in TV technology and the delivery landscape? Are they ready for a time when there's no, you know, dominant lead captain or whatever, and then a crew after that? Or if the crew will, it's a dominant person, and we have modern day storytelling where people die and we do Game of Thrones or whatever. But
yeah, you know, it's funny, people are debating, is it going to be Prime Universe? Is it going to be Abrams verse? And now that we're talking about this idea of doing many seasons, but each season is just a completely different story, but needing that thread, it reminds me, Stephen Baxter, who's the great science fiction writer, he wrote a series of books called Manifold. And there's Manifold Space and Manifold Time and Manifold Origin. And they all take place in kind of like alternate realities. So it would be sort of like Prime versus Abrams verse here. But they're the same characters. if that makes sense.
Right, okay.
But not the same characters like in the way that Kirk and Abramsverse and Kirk in the Prime Universe are. It's just kind of like telling the way life unfolds for this character differently. And who knows, that could be a very unusual way to create a thread. Yeah, it's kind of like a tapestry, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, that just popped in my mind right now.
Yeah. But yeah, these are all things that we do not know at the moment. And it's amazing. I mean, the other thing that's funny, it's just the fact that everybody is talking about delivery and content and all that. It's almost like I know that the Trek fans talking about this, how the world blew up today and the internet melted and all that. But it was almost like, well, take that, lead into Star Wars in December.
That's what they're doing.
Not that I think we'll displace that globally, but it's sure.
But at least for a day, Star Trek was trending.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And I think, you know, and then maybe it'll settle down into a lower groove. Well, obviously it will. But it's, yeah. The other thing about this, it's so weird. I've been following along the last 3 or 4 years, and I have many compadres in and out of the industry professionally and all that. And an awful lot of us were getting more and more, including people that work at CBS, more and more discouraged and disparaged that forget what, as a fan, you would want, thinking from a business point of view, for making money in a good old capitalist USA system, you know. How in the world you could let the 50th anniversary of your franchise go by without it? And I'm sorry, the movie will be nice, but that's expected. This is the third one. That's not groundbreakingly fresh. I'm talking about like in 86, on the 20th anniversary, when Paramount said, yes, we're coming back to TV. And that's what they did that year. And it was huge. And it tied in with a movie, and it tied in with, you know, the other events they were doing. But that was like not just for the moment, but that was for the future. And this whole time, this last 2 or 3 years, thinking, so they're really going to let this happen and not at least announce a show for the future? Is this whole tangle and everything with Paramount and the movie and the TV and all that stuff not going to be resolvable to do that? Is it really going to be mired in corporate bureaucracy? And the fact they hop up today and push this, and the fact that it's like TV, it's the digital franchise, you know, it's the on-demand side that's pushing this, along with the TV studio. It's almost like, yay, corporate America can function. It really can happen. It's almost like, you know, like watching Congress pass a law now from scratch, like it's supposed to. It's like, yes, the system can work, and on the economic side, and that can actually once again align with what fans want. It was like this, yay. Now, we may not like the choices they make, but the fact that they're at least doing this was as much, you know, the first hour or two, that really crossed my mind. It was like, yes, they really can function. They can respond to the public demand. They could, and they in turn can sense that from their perspective that this is what should happen. You know, I mean, I'm just throwing that out, but that's funny. But there you go.
I'm getting a little Battlestar Galactica vibe here, Larry. You know, this has all happened before, and it'll all happen again. 76, 77, 86, 87, 2016, 2017.
Oh, great. This is a pitch I made to the Star Trek magazine about how these cycles all go in 6s and 7 years. But it is odd like that. Yeah.
Well, like you said a moment ago, the fact that there's been such a long break and they really are starting with a clean slate can be liberating, and they can really go and do whatever they want at this point. But the other option is that they could go the easy, perhaps cost-saving route of using the sets from the Abramsverse films and making an Abramsverse series, not with Kirk and Spock and that crew, with another crew, but using the already established aesthetics of these films instead of really creating their own thing. Do you think they would go that way with Kurtzman on board, with...
Well, here's the thing. I don't know that they would technically, because, okay, of the movie sets, there's the bridge, and I don't know what Beyond has, but there's the bridge, and they did build a sick bay, they did build lots of corridors.
There's a brewery.
It's like, yeah, there's the brewery. it's a little bit like it's just like a fan film. It's like we start with the most important sets, then we build up. No, I don't know that there's that many assets that would be transferred to a city. I don't know that in this case, because again, we're not in the 80s and 90s anymore. And the faster everybody gets out of that, the better. It's not like the TV series is generating all this stuff and the movies are going to amortize that and then use their movie budget to build new big stuff that then gets brought back over to TV and reused. And then when it gets to be a movie time, we just repaint the Voyager sick bay and it becomes the Enterprise Z sick bay, or the conference room becomes, you know, the conference or the president's dining office in Star Trek VI, or engineering even. But we're also not just dealing with the movie versus the show. We're dealing with Paramount and CBS. And what, like, where right. are those sets stored? And would Paramount want, you know, there may be too many hoops there to do that. And in the end, they'll just think, why don't we, you know, we want our own independence and we want our own freedom to deal with this. And even if they go, and that's not even if they don't do the like 1 year on, 1 year off formats. Even if they do go with a regular standing, whatever they may, regular standing format and ship and lead, you know, hero crew and hero ship and do that. I just think all of our old ways of thinking about how the movies, you know, use the series assets as a springboard, that's just out the window. Now, even though Alex was, you know, let's remember this too. We think of Alex Kurtzman and Roberto Orsi, Alex and Bob, as being this writing team. They still have companies that own properties that are still, you know, doing shows. Hawaii Five-O is one, a few others. And I think they even still have some new deals going. But they've basically stopped team writing. So they have production. And this is only Alex Kurtzman's company.
Yeah, and, this is Secret Hideout.
Yeah, Secret Hideout. But the point is that this is not Bad Robot. He's not teamed with Bob.
Yeah.
And you know, Bob was... you know, quite publicly, you know, kicked out of the director's chair there and the script not used. Yeah. But Alex was never part of the third movie to begin with. So he was already kind of, you know, looking at what else he worked on the first two. He went through the grind. He took the slings and arrows of Outrageous Fortune and the yays and the nays both. But he had already pulled himself back from that platform. So, you know, there's the whole wave of people going, oh my God, why are they handing the keys to Kurtzman? He's already ruined the franchise of those first two. You know, so the beginners on the first two movies, I don't think he's emotionally attached to necessarily, I could be wrong, but I don't know if he's emotionally attached to the JJ. I was going back and rereading interviews because I interviewed Bob. I've never met Alex directly aside from taking his picture outside the strike day in 07. But I know that Bob Orsi was kind of the biggest overall fan and could pretty much sit down and, you know, debate quotes and trivia and throw titles at you and all that, like any fan.
And by fan, you mean Star Trek fan?
I mean capital
general,
F fan. Not, right, right.
Not fan of the Abrams verse.
No, I mean like Star Trek fan, like growing. Right, and, but right, his right. his aunt, his uncle. You know, that he named Richard Robaugh, that he named the captain for. His uncle was the original series fan, and he grew up with Next Generation. But Alex was an original series fan. So, they do have their fan cred in there. And so I'm just saying that I don't know that people are all saying, oh, Alex Kurtzman was first two movies, so he's going to want JJ verse design and format and background. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's necessarily the case. Well, you know.
Well, see, I get the impression, too, because that fandom, especially Orsi's fandom, I think it really comes through in the comics, the Star Trek ongoing comic series, which is quite good. And I think the Abramsverse format works much better in those comics than it does on the screen. But you can really see his fandom in there. And so if Orsi were in charge of the series, again, I'm not sure that he would just pick up what they're doing in the films either. He might be open to doing something different. What do you think about the fact that Orsi isn't involved, that they went with just Kurtzman, given the fact that the studio vetoed Orsi's script, kicked him out of the director's chair, brought in...
Let's not... Okay, don't mix your Kafarian apples and oranges. I mean, we're talking... This is CBS TV dealing with Kurtzman.
Paramount
dealing with Orsi as a feature.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Sure. But no, what I'm going at here is that you know that CBS, in looking at the property... Again, we've talked about how this is a business venture for them, right? They're watching what Paramount does. They're seeing fan reaction to what Paramount is creating. They've seen the reaction... that Paramount had to Orsi's script and then what happened there. Do you think there was potentially nervousness about having Orsi involved and so they just went with Kurtzman only?
I have no clue. I mean, we're also talking about, you know, we're looking at this through a Star Trek microscope here, but these are guys separately and together who have, you know, this is a business and they have relationships and they have their niches and they have resumes of things, gasp, beyond Star Trek as series and as features. And it's just, sometimes it's just the lay of the land. They might have asked Bob, and maybe after getting burned on the movie here, maybe he wanted to back off from Star Trek himself.
Possible.
You know, or maybe that was never considered, and but we're so focused on thinking of them as this duo that maybe the CBS, it was like it was never even considered, but it wasn't meant as a slap, you know, or like, oh, you've, you're persona non grata at Paramount over that, except aside from being a producer, so we're not even going to go touch you. We don't want to taint our new series with your name. And that's crazy. I mean, I just, you know, they're their own creatures. We obviously know how CBS on the TV side and Paramount on the movie side are working in different orbits here. So, you know, we don't know, but I just really don't see as probably was not meant as an omission or a slap, you know, intentionally.
Yeah, probably not. It's just kind of curious, you know, because they were both involved in the first two films.
I think he was, I'm just totally gut spitballing here, and heaven forbid I'm, you know, not as attuned as maybe tightly as 10 years ago, but my gut feeling is that either he wasn't approached at all, no editorial comment intended by that, or maybe they did ask and he, you know.
Yeah. So here's something else. This is pure speculation, but...
Oh, no.
You know, you've...
Speculation? At this point, heaven.
Yeah, like we've not already spent the last 50 minutes speculating on
things. Speculation, the dopey game where you're the poor fan. Yeah.
So fans are going to be very interested in how the series is going to unfold, the development of the series itself. And I remember DS9 being created. I remember Voyager being created and Enterprise being created as a fan. Now, when TNG was created, I was still in high school and I wasn't quite as in tune to what was going on there. It's just, oh, the show's coming on TV. Great. After that, I was more interested in what's going on behind the scenes. But you've been there in Hollywood as DS9 was being created, maybe, but definitely Voyager and definitely Enterprise. So, having seen those series kind of being put together, at least from the sidelines there, what do you think is going to unfold over the course of the next 14 months for us?
Just to do that, I was not here for Next Gen, obviously, and I was not here for DS9. So the first time I came out to with the contract anyway, the first time I came out to with the contract to do the book, DS9 had just premiered, like in fifth season. Yeah, it was coming along, and just it was the big secret thing. You didn't go over there. I did watch. I did see the real world effects on people and bodies and budgets and whatever, and the sneaking around and the secret envelopes and everything for Voyager, and then especially on Enterprise. I don't know. I think I saw some, this is so just purely schedule wise and production and all evolution of a show. This is for January 17, so it's a mid-year technically. Although, you know, it's streaming, it's not a network model.
Well, it's
but that's
just
that's
like
the same as that's the same as Voyager.
DS9 Voyager.
Yeah. Right. And so they'll shoot their pilots in the late spring, early summer. They'll start production in the summer fall. They'll get several shows going. So if they're going to shoot the pilot in April, May, it's kind of in the regular, it's kind of the later stage pilot, what they call pilot season out here. But this is October. They're going to probably within a week. I mean, they may not have made this announcement. They announced that they had been interviewing, that Kurtzman had been interviewing, Kurtzman and Heather Caden is producer, had been interviewing. The other question I have is when they say a writer, do they mean a writer for the pilot? Or do they mean the showrunner, head writer? I would think whoever's going to write the pilot would be the showrunner, or at least in the in the credits, in the team. But I would think that this announcement, again, part of me thinks they would have announced the writer if they had one. Part of me thinks that they've got to be very close to having that nailed down, or else they wouldn't have they wouldn't have announced this. I don't know. But very soon, this is November now. So very soon they're going to get a writer on board, get a script going, because they've got to staff up. They've got to get the art staff and design. Just off the top of my head, I know that, and we're talking a fall premiere, but in 86, 87, you know, they had Mike Okuda and Rick Sternbach, who had movie resumes, dropping their stuff off, and Andy Probert were all getting hired by Bob Justman directly in November and December before Herman Zimmerman, technically their boss, was hired. He was like, which was kind of the odd way they did that, but they were like hiring these guys in key things to illustrate and do models and kind of, you know, because they weren't just doing a new show, they were jumping 20 years of updated development, and you know, it was the first time anybody tried this. So, but that was a case where they were hiring the art staff in November and December and January to shoot a pilot for April to go on the air in September. So just as a comparison, every other time they've had the people, you know, it was either Herman or Richard James. Everybody was right there on board. Yeah. It was just like, you've got to double up, just like they're doing a movie. You've got to double up. Okay, I'm going to have a ton of money and no sleep this year, you know. So that's kind of the time frame. So the fact this is a January, so I'm going to Voyager especially. Voyager, you know, had to wait for the next generation sets to be wrecked for generations before they could. They'd been developing them and doing the plans. They couldn't actually get in and build the sets until, you know, July, August, and a lot of Caretaker was shot on location. So, you know, but again, there you go. So they're shooting, and then they had the, you know, the Janeway casting drama, which kind of screwed things up, and they were really behind the, they were a little bit behind the gun, but it's not quite like you hear those horror stories from the original series where they're like just on the optical effects are holding them up and the mad rewriting and they're like Bob Justman's pulling his hair out in his memos.
Yeah, exactly.
There was never that much of a crisis on making the air date for January with those delays on, but that, again, that's kind of that same time frame. So I don't know if that figured into why a January debut and not a September debut. On one hand, again, it's streaming, well, and that's, they're not tied to the traditional, you know, network definitions of seasons.
My theory is that they probably would have preferred to get this out in autumn to coincide actually with the 50th, but the development just wasn't there yet, and so this is the soonest they can do it, January 2017.
Right, that's, and as far as the old bugaboo about, ooh, competing with the movie and will confuse people, which I didn't come back to you on that a while ago. That's just so bunkus. That's just so disrespecting the audience. I'm so tired of hearing how people will be confused if that happens. Well, we've got Marvel pumping out a billion movies a year and DC, and we're going to get confused over the Star Trek's movie series and its, you know, TV series, movie franchise and TV series. That's crazy talk.
Well, so, Larry, I don't know. I remember back in 1991, I watched Spock on The Next Generation on television, and I saw Spock in the theater, and I had to check into the hospital for 7 days. After I didn't know what to do with myself.
I don't know. And then that pilot of DS9 when Picard was on, what show am I watching? I'm so confused.
Yeah, yeah.
And don't even talk to me about that one where Sisko was running around in a gold shirt. That just blew me away. That was just, I just couldn't take that. I think I've checked into the same hospital you did by then.
So one thing that's really different this time, even from when Enterprise was created, is that now the internet is completely pervasive and social media is completely pervasive in our lives. How are they going to keep anything under wraps at all when it comes to casting, when it comes to art development, shooting, or are they even going to try? Are they going to actually embrace it, do you think, and make fans part of the process, or are they going to try to keep it under wraps and just surprise us?
I think if they're going to be halfway savvy about this, they're going to, I think as the internet started to explode, especially for the development of Enterprise, you know, Rick was old school, and he's like a lot of people where the internet just kind of like threw them. The first 5 or 6 years, all the corporate people and the attorneys that were used to the way things had been done, you know, it was not a sharing economy. And the whole idea of the internet is this big, you know, mixing pot here. People would, they were still trying to keep the franchises and the networks. It was like the last gasp of the old days on Johnny Carson's Tonight Show when they would say, they'd have a guest and they would say, yes, his show, blah, 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 as we say, on another network. You know, they wouldn't even say, it was that old thing of we're on NBC and if you're on CBS, well, we won't say it because we can't promote a show on another, you know, yeah, although right, that's what right, exactly yeah. what we're doing. And now no one cares. And I saw that change over with Communicator. We would be covering things from the late 90s to the early aughts. That totally changed. And I've probably told those stories before. So no, and Alex Kurtzman and anybody he hires, we've had a generation now where people have gotten used to podcasts and chats and, you know, and how to successfully leak. I mean, the 2009 movie campaign was brilliant. You know, Disney and the Star Wars campaigns from the prequels have been brilliant. They had such a masterful campaign to get people in the theater for episode one. The only thing they did wrong about the pre-sale campaign for episode one Star Wars was they opened the movie. But anyway, but you know what I mean? But yeah, I totally think by now we'll have marketing people, we'll have writers and the creative design staff who are totally comfortable with having, you know, sitting down and doing things for media, for whatever arm of the network, you know, is asking them to do, you know, a Reddit chat or an AD, ask me anything or a pod, yeah. whatever. And it's, there's going to be enough anticipation about it because we'll have been, you know, this is going to, by the time the countdown to this comes in later 2016, just think about this. We would have been through the hoo-ha of the Star Wars movie. We'll be over. Even in the Trek world, I don't know where the hell the Marvel and the DC, you know, expanded universe movie franchises will be. But even within Star Trek, we would have been through all the 50th hoo-ha in August and September. Star Trek Beyond will have opened. Really, another thing about January is they're going to have the Trek terrain, much less a lot of the big high power franchise sci-fi, you know, genre terrain to themselves by then. So, those last 2 and 3 and 4 months in the fall and winter going into January are going to be a frenzy for this. And, as it should be. And, I just can't believe they won't be getting creative and be true to the norms of 2016 social media and what people expect, you know, online. Yeah.
I think it would be great. You know, there are going to be a lot of fans who want to be surprised and are going to try to avoid all spoilers. Yeah. Yeah. But there are other fans who I think will enjoy following the process. And I think it would be great if they really do try to make fans part of the process leading up to the show. I think that'll also even help them in terms of their distribution through All Access, where they have to get people to pay $5.99 for this. You know, creating that buildup and anticipation in fans will make that an easier transition as well, I think.
Yeah, this is not rocket science. And this, I mean, they had this, the Paramount people had this down pat from 06 and 07 and 08 into going to the 09 movie. And now we're 10 years later. So, I used to say when we would have, and you know, I love Rick to pieces. And I think as the years have gone by, some of the immediate hurt and pain people felt as some of the stories have come out about how he was a firewall for a lot of good that he just didn't talk about. For good and bad, Rick was pretty tight-lipped about things. And it would drive us crazy when we would interview him in the Communicator and he would say, yes, and this episode is one we're very excited about. We think it's going to be,
yeah,
you know.
I remember that.
And it would be say the same thing every time. But at the same time, he was a firewall the other direction. And now when we hear these stories about, you're like, oh, goofy, early, you know, rookie UPN people wanted a rock band in the mess hall of the NX-01 every week. Oh, we can do that. It's like, how stupid. So back in the day, I used to talk about how when that would be frustrating and you couldn't get anything out of Rick and they wouldn't release teasers. And even we as licensed, as studio arms at StarTrek.com and as licensed entities who were paying extra, much less that was our job, to be the exclusive delivery point and give out cool, hot stuff to people and tease the world for what's coming up. And we would be pulling our hair out to do that. And I remember thinking people would be complaining about that. I said, well, you know, you could have it the other way. Instead of a guy who's hanging on to everything, you could have somebody who you thought was exactly the opposite, but then you realize was so masterful at teasing and manipulating you that you didn't realize until after the ice cream truck hit you You know, well, I got, mm-hmm. you know, I got a free ice cream cone, but I got run over in the process. I don't know. That's a ridiculous analogy. But that's kind of, you know, we've come to the generation where JJ on down had been, you know, prized and celebrated and wonderful at that. And people love it. And that's kind of the world we live in. And that we've just had 10, 15 years. We've had a generation steeped in that. So I just can't imagine, you know, that not happening. But yeah, the teases and the leaks and all of that will be like, wow, this is some paparazzi climbed on this tower and shot these pictures. Or did he? You know, this is all their clever way of showing us all this stuff on green screen and just, you know, yeah. not even just teasing fans, but blowing up the internet along the way. So, and all the social media channels. So,
well, it's going to be interesting to see what they do. I remember when Enterprise was being developed, I can remember going to Tower Records to find Star Trek Communicator magazine just Yay! So I could find out what was going on with the series, because that was my only way here.
Oh, someday I'll do a book or do something major before I totally lose my brain cells about I was here front and center for we had just moved for the Voyager development, but I was hip deep in all kinds of franchise and official capacities for Enterprise. And it was like nothing, even just hearing it secondhand, if I hadn't seen Next Gen and DS9 and Voyagers, there was so much pressure. Everyone knew that Enterprise was the future of the franchise. And they were trying to make this huge jump and, you know, and get out of thinking, oh, we have to amortize the sets and props and costumes and make this huge and change personnel if we needed to. And there was so much pressure on it, and then so much secrecy. And I think I've said this before, it and Nemesis were coming along at the same time. And for once, everything was loose around Nemesis. It was Enterprise that was like the, you know, in the vault, you know, yeah. You know, killing your sister and cutting blood to get anything out of anybody. Again, I don't know where these metaphors are coming from tonight.
You should do a book. This is going to be the next
I'm
book.
I'm just so shell-shocked. Book of metaphors. No, I mean, yeah, the headline today is...
Yeah, you're in shock from the announcement today, yeah. right?
I mean, all these things kept taking... Well, it was 10 years. I mean, I remember back in 2005 when Enterprise was canceled, you know, and all the mainstream media would say... I sound like Sarah Palin. The lamestream media. That was not even thinking, well, Star Trek is dead. Well, it was a nice 40 years you had Star Trek, but all things must
yeah,
end.
Yeah, no, everyone buried the franchise.
I know, like, it's a billion-dollar... And back then, even, they were, like, doing Bewitched movies that weren't about Bewitched or whatever. You know, ridiculous yeah. takeoffs. And I'm like, this is a billions and billions-dollar franchise. You think it's just they're just going to let it evaporate? I don't think so. It's just a matter of how long and when. And yeah. we would almost have, like, you know, dartboards and office pools. Well, you think it'll be 10 years, 20 years? And that was what you would hear. And then, you know, JJ, well, look, guys, it's going to be 3 or 4 years after all, you know, as a movie, yeah. as a friend. But here, TV, I said today, well, there you go, guys. It was 10 years. And so when we get all our panties in a wad about anything that happens, it's like I just try to say from watching these – you know, I go back to remembering as a fan, people being pissed when it leaked that Spock was going to be killed in Wrath of Khan. And there was a huge yeah. fan campaign back before we had hashtags. There was a huge campaign to did a marketing study to show that if people boycotted the Wrath of Khan, that Paramount would lose X amount in ticket sales and marketing and sales and, you know, licensed products and all that stuff. And you know, Harb Bennett later on talking about, you know, oh my God, pulling out their hair. Like, how does this crap happen? So it's like, it's nothing new. We've had that in the original series fans that were not going to watch Next Gen, and the people who hated the prequel idea of Enterprise because Star Trek always went forward. And they, you know, so we've had all this before, but it's going to be interesting to watch this unravel. And as never before, kind of like we were talking about Leonard Nimoy being the first one of the original series cast to die in the really in the steeped social media era, and how that was a different experience.
Oh, right.
Even yeah. from just a few. This is going to be a totally different critter, even different than the daily drip going into Star Trek 09, because this won't be just a 2-hour movie. We're talking about a series, you yeah. know.
We're building something.
We're building something years. From multiple hours, yeah. multiple scripts, multiple people thinking yeah. long term on all the different aspects they have to deal with. And, I'm already excited, and that's why I'm saying, you know, like, I would much rather have, and heaven forbid I say this, if it's not going to be Prime, I would much rather it at least be a new series that gives you enough hours to get invested in. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But I would hate for canon to go from the prized piece of Star Trek to the thing that everybody loves to make fun of and the canonistas and the canon, you know, heads and all that, to forgetting that that's what elevates, to me, that's what elevates Star Trek among other, you know, mere incredible storytelling vehicles with great stories and great casts and great writing and great intentions. It's like the icing on the cake is the fact that they've held this, thanks to people, you know, Gene and Dorothy Fontana and Bob Justman in the original series and their crazy memos they wrote. We need to figure out the Vulcan names. We need to figure out the ships and the fleet, you know, from those days, respecting the audience up to the same thing, but then really having, you know, Mike Okuda and Rick Sternbach there on the inside trying to keep, even when the writers are busy just trying to get the damn shows out on time, trying to keep that internal consistency and then having it all blossom and payback over the years. I would hate for that to be disrespected and not have this one become a, because there's so many areas in the sandbox you can still go to. And that's part of what the discussion on today was.
Well, that's how I feel about it. That's how I feel about it. And that's what I want to see. I will say, last point on that, the people who don't want to have a show set in the Abramsverse, which I'm one of those people, I do think, though, if you did a television series in that timeline, had nothing to do with the Enterprise, Kirk, Spock, you just tell really good stories set in that timeline, and you, there are enough of them week after week after week, you can get invested in it over time, and you can enjoy it. And I think people would like it a lot better than they like the two films. So it's not the end of the world if this ends up being set in that timeline.
I think, again, I think it would be, I don't understand the creative, and I don't understand the business decision to go a third way. But, you know, but who knows? They, because there may be, here's the other thing. It depends on who's making the decisions. If somebody, if there's a groupthink going on, or if somebody's going to hand the keys to Alex and he's going to keep them and make a copy for a showrunner, or if he's going to hand the keys, if he's just going to basically Dick Wolf it and just hand the keys over to somebody else after he makes the major decision of who to do that with, and then that person picks the team. But either way, I hope they would either, somebody may decide, if the people making the decisions are all about the, you know, well, we've had the JJ verse for the, like you were saying earlier, we've had the JJ verse here for, 8 years, and it'll just confuse people, and who remembers? But if this is CBS, not Paramount, and CBS is the one that is selling those discs, and CBS is the one that's watching the Netflix counters spin and spin and spin. I mean, I know in the past I've joked about people, like, the best way to get your Star Trek back is let
just play Star Trek
all day long, go on vacation, leave Star Trek Netflix, you know, playing season long passes, and let the counter run. And and who knows, but I know for a fact that those numbers, that may be part of where we're at today, because those numbers were spinning. I mean, you know, it just is not, CBS just decided, why do we give the money totally to somebody else when we're going to develop our own platform? You know, which is kind of, which is, again, taking the best of both worlds. There's the Star Trek demand. We've got it quantified. And now let's just bring all the profit home and have it on, you know, why pay somebody else when we can do it ourselves? Because we're CBS. Yeah. So, but given all that, I would think that, again, the business sense may be just as much for, it's how deep rooted they are. If they're thrown by the 10 years, there may even be an ego thing. That if it was the other way around, as fans, we would hate and clench and pull our hair out. But in this case, it might work in our favor, where the TV people versus the movie people, to use wonderful terms, the TV guys and CBS may feel proprietary. They may feel selfish. They may feel a sense of ego or pride about keeping it with their end, you know, which is prime. And that may be oversimplifying it, but it may come down to a few people making decisions, or there may be some legal and financial reasons to do the same thing. But I mean, but again, those are all things that may be in play, reasons, and someday we'll figure all that, you know, what it was.
Well, that's a good point, and actually we should move on from this soon, but there could be legal reasons, right? Because I know that the licensing works a little bit different, at least your ability to use images from the Abramsverse films is controlled a bit differently than the rest of the Prime universe, is it not?
Well,
it certainly seems that way.
That's because it is that way. I'll just say this. On paper, it's not supposed to be. In real life, that happens. Now, that may change since we've had the big sea change here of JJ going to direct Star Wars, of, you know, outside the original inner circle there not working, this being Justin Lin and his, you know, team working on this movie, that some of that vibe might change. But that's there's the letter of the law, and then there's the court's interpretation, you know, kind of a thing. And the Supreme Court has definitely changed for this third movie. So, ooh, there's a nice segue. So, so some of that may ease up. We'll just have to see as we get into it.
Okay. Well, last thing to touch on before we wrap up here, the big controversial topic, distribution. We've already talked about it a lot during our discussion, the fact that it's going to be on CBS All Access and you have to pay $5.99. Now, of course, one thing we've speculated on over the past year or two is the idea that maybe Netflix would want to produce Star Trek for CBS and it would be on Netflix, in which case you would still have to pay. I pay $7.99 because I've had Netflix since it was $7.99. Now it's more, right? Now, what is it, like $9.99?
I don't know, but I'm $10.99. In the same boat. It's
gone up a little bit. But regardless, people are already going to have to pay if it were on Netflix. Of course, the big difference is that with Netflix, you get all kinds of things from all kinds of studios, whereas with All Access, you're going to get just what CBS puts on there. And let's be honest, for the purpose of our audience who's listening to us right now, it's probably Star Trek. That's what they're interested in. So it's essentially paying $5.99 per month just to watch Star Trek. Do you think this is going to hurt the show, or do you think that it's actually going to be good for the show? Because I can see it both ways.
I'm just kind of flabbergasted. I mean, I was not expecting that. For one thing, we've been sitting here talking for 2-3 years about the new landscape, all the platforms, even starting with would it be on a premium channel and CBS owned Showtime. So, you know, and it would be a shorter seat, all those reasons.
Rod and I actually talked about that years ago, like 4 years ago, about what if it were on Showtime.
Right. I mean, that's how long this has been out there. We've been talking about these things for that long. It seems like an eternity. But even, and of course, you might say, well, I already pay for Showtime, or I already pay for Netflix when the focus went over to the, you know, and all the stupid rumors misquoted to me and others. people would say, well, I'm already paying for Netflix, so it's not that big a deal to me. But the bottom line is that if that's the delivery platform, but you know, it's I'm just really shocked. These people are such, if we've got so many fans, I don't understand the wave of, I mean, I thought we were supposed to be living in 2016, not 1996. I mean, the fact that people are paying for so much already here and there in bits, and that's, they're not saying 20 and 25 a month. It's, you know, 5, 6, 7, whatever it is a month. And, you know, when you get, you know, you could do the old marketing thing of, well, gosh, that's half a movie ticket a month that you're getting. You're going to get three or 4 hours of new Star Trek. You're going to get hours of new Star Trek. I mean, after waiting for it 10 years and listening to all the crap and the things, and if you didn't like the movies, this might be different, and putting up with everybody else handling their franchises better when you were the original one to do it. And all of that frustration for the newer fans. Now, the old fogies, I can see them going, well, I'm going to pay. But so many people are old cable people who are already paying for, you know, extra channels anyway. If Star Trek is your thing, your baby, your passion, I don't see what $6, $7, $8 a month to get, you know, 3 or 4 hours. And then if it's only on for 6 months a year and 6 months it's not, well, then you turn it off for those 6 months.
Then you cancel,
you know, and come back. I was just baffled by that reaction today.
Well, on Hyper Channel, Mike Schindler did the math that it comes out to 9 cents per day. That would be the cost, you know, to watch Star Trek if you pay the $5.99.
That was a cup of coffee in 1960.
And they do.
I mean,
weekly.
You know, come on, guys.
Yeah. So, you know, I can see it a couple of ways there. I know that some people are sensitive to recurring charges. I know that's the case in my household, where if we have too many things that we're paying for monthly, it becomes a big point of tension. So that's one thing that could affect some people. And then for some people, it's just, you know, here's yet another thing I have to pay for, and maybe it just pushes them over their budget. So I hope that if the first run is on there, that's great. I think it would be smart of CBS to maybe put the episode on StarTrek.com the following week or 2 weeks later, or some kind of delayed showing, so that all Star Trek fans can see it in some format. And that may also serve to get those fans who are on the fence to decide to go over and pay the $5.99 so that they can watch it in all its HD glory on the TVs in their living rooms. So we'll see. I am, of course, concerned about what they're going to do about international distribution.
Right.
They say in the press release that they will distribute internationally,
right,
but I have no idea what that means at the moment. So we're going to find out.
The CBS Studios International will distribute the series for runs on television and multiple platforms around the world, which is, you know, just applesauce mush for all the different countries have all their different individual situations.
We'll do all sorts of things. So I don't know. Like, here, is it going to come on NHK here? Is it going to be a streaming service online that I can pay for, like I do ESPN, which is how I watch college football in Japan?
Will ripped and torrented, Star Trek 2017s be the hottest thing, you know, online, like everything else is? Oh, look, it's a mark of pride that we're the number one, you know, ripped and pirated.
I think that was a big marketing thing by HBO. Like, okay, let's make sure no one can get Game of Thrones, and then everyone will pirate that, and then we can claim we're the most pirated show ever. So, hey, look at us. You know, we have the best shows.
Right, right.
I don't think they're going to go that route. The one last point here I'll say, when I said I could see it both ways, being good for the show or bad for the show, I'm concerned, and I expand upon this in Hyper Channel if people want to go listen to that. But my point there, Larry, was just that it could be bad for the show in that it will restrict viewership to some extent. But it could be good for the show in that it is truly an investment for CBS, and it's not going to have, as you said early on today, I think, it's not going to have to fight for those ratings for its survival in the same way that it would if it were simply on CBS proper. And so in that sense, it could be better for us fans because there will be a little bit more stability for the Star Trek series, I think, than there otherwise would
be. And anytime you get off, I mean, there's the broadcast networks and there's like the cable nets. And then you jump to the premium channels, of which like CBS owns Showtime, and they've all, but you know, and HBO has been cleaning up with awards the last few years from The Sopranos onward. And that's the other thing that this will allow them to be. It's going to be interesting to see how much they push the envelope. We haven't even talked about this. No one's talked about this that I've seen. You know, where's the adult line on content, and you know, where are they going to go with this? Because they've got the freedom to do that's my point. And we've already shattered the barrier about, like Next Generation on syndication. You know, Rick would talk about they had the three strikes against it. It was science fiction, it was a reboot, and it was on syndication as far as getting Emmy awards. Well, that's 5 centuries ago now. I mean, you know, the forget HBO and the premiums. Netflix and those guys are, you know, cleaning up with House of Cards and Orange and all those. So that ship has sailed. That glass ceiling has been shattered. So Star Trek would be in the running, depending on you know what they actually came up, the quality of the shows. They'd be in the running again, probably positioned better to do that than if they'd been on network. But again, like you said, any of those channels, the delivery systems are not, you know, ratings dependent, and it's the healthier place and the least sacrificial place to put the series and have it prosper and live long.
Well, if people want to go back and listen to Matter Stream 14, this is a show that we recorded in 2012, and Rod Roddenberry and I are talking. This was right before they launched Mission Log. And so Rod and I were talking about his dad's vision and his plans for the podcast for Mission Log. And we talked about if the show were on Showtime, and I'm pretty sure that we talked a little bit about that envelope of, like, not adult and, like, you know, sexual so much, but just a more adult-oriented type of content that, especially in the past, they haven't been able to show on network television and what they might do there. So you can find that, trek.fm/matterstream. It's actually matter-stream14, right, or, you know, just go to iTunes and all and subscribe to Matterstream. Look for episode 14. So,
well, there's so many things, all the way from just the technology of TV production, you know, green screening and CGI, and maybe getting more bang for the buck without having to build so many sets versus, although Star Trek has a pride factor, but if they're only doing 10 or 12 episodes a year, it might be the economics to do that. you know, but the CGI, mm-hmm. the live shooting technology, and then the, like we talked about, the episodic formatting, what will they be? Standalones or which I can't believe to some extent, you know, serialized or the one cast a year format.
Probably serialized.
And then the whole thing of, you know, LGBT characters, which has been this ongoing decades old thing of when, you know, will they or won't they? And I just have to imagine that some of these things are just going to be old. I mean, I've said for a long time, it's kind of like that analogy with wars. It's like every war starts off being fought like the old one, the last one,
yeah, right.
and then they adjust. Yeah. We always launch into a new era of Star Trek being held back by our perceptions, the mistakes, the corrections from the last one. You know, it's like they launched Next Generation. Oh, the captain's not going to beam down every time, and the transporter won't break down every time. And so then it turned into, okay, so we'll have the holodeck break down every time, and that'll be, you know, right. or the captain thing will last 2 years until the fine actor playing him gets pissed about being stuck on the ship every show. I mean, you know, so yeah. we always go into the new era thinking braced from where we came from, and yeah. and but we've got a whole new TV, entertainment, media, online, just all these ancillary things, the primary and the secondary aspects to this and the business model. And it's just, it's really thrilled. And it's been a natural 10 years of, you know, the science, the cultural background that we can bring, the stories that are going to be the themes and the metaphors for, you know, the little morality plays or whatever the message shows are, is all been naturally 10 years further along. So some of the stuff that we talked mm-hmm. about, what a new show would do differently, is going to happen naturally on all those levels. So that's exciting to see. And I almost feel like the pace of the world, you know, 20 years go by between the original series and Next Gen. And then they're basically pulling from the same well for 18 years, although, you know, like by the end of Enterprise, they were shooting digitally and, you know, tech-wise. And then, you know, the commentary had changed 9/11 and a lot of things were coloring the world at large in tech. So we've had 10 years now, which is only half that gap from the last big gap. And I feel like the world has almost changed as much in 10 as it has, you know, in the 20. So I think it's a perfect time that way. I mean, I think we've had enough breathing time go by, as much as we all hated to have those years tick off, that I think that's all going to, you know, add to the mix here too.
Yeah. Well, it's very exciting. It's been a very exciting day. And now I have spent 3 hours behind the mic talking about the new Star Trek series. So,
and you're ready to do three more.
That's fine. I'm ready to do three more. No, it's 6:15 p.m. here now, so it's time for me to wrap up for the day. But Larry, thanks for jumping on with me and recording a whole show.
Well, thanks.
About this.
And like I said,
always fun to do one of our special ready rooms.
Yes, it is. And like I said at the beginning, I'm thrilled that this one is on an up. Like, nobody died. Nothing ended. We're actually talking about the future and something beginning. And and even with the trepidations people have, hey, it's first quarter. The gun has just gone off. The kickoff is about to happen. It's the score is nothing to nothing. And how, you like how I went into football with that? I didn't even know I was going to do that.
Yep.
But, you know, all things are possible here at this early stage. So it's an exciting time. Yeah. And I was thinking also today of all the, and I hate to go here, of the kids who have only been with us since the JJ era, who have never been through a big paradigm shift like this. And it's like, I was, hey guys, you're getting your battle medal today. You're getting your, you know, your combat badge today. You've lived through a major turning point here in Trek, and you know, welcome to the club. We're talking about all these other dates and times and past things, and here you go. And you're about to get your first big. It won't be the thing you were born into. It'll be the thing you watched and, you know, from boy to man with or whatever with Star Trek. So that's exciting too. And I just you can almost tell palpably. For all the downturn in the internet and social media, like when Leonard passed away, it's almost like this is exactly 180 different, and people are just upbeat, and there's a spring in their step. And even the people who are, you know, worried about the future and all that stuff, they're secretly excited too, I think, most of them.
Yeah. Yeah, remember everyone, this is great news. So I see a lot of posts where people's first reactions are kind of negative. Like, I know they want to see new Star Trek on television, but they're just fearing the worst. Don't fear the worst, okay? These are professionals doing this.
Right, right, right.
They want to make money. They want to satisfy the fans. We're getting Star Trek back on television, so let's be happy about it.
I'm flashing back to 86 when the people were poo-pooing Next Generation, you know, because it wasn't Kirk, Spock, yeah. McCoy, and how could it be Star Trek, and I'm not going to watch. And I just like, shut up! We're getting Star Trek back! Shut up!
We're getting Star Trek back.
Same speech.
All right. Well, Larry, if people want to find you and find out what else you've got going on, where should they go for that?
Well, of course, LarryNemechek.com is the hub. I've got to leave here and work on my post for Trekland, on my blog, treklandblog.com. And I was actually going to get started posting some way overdue videos until today's news and popped
now,
up.
And now it's well after midnight for you, right?
Yeah.
You're going to go do that.
I'll probably start on those tomorrow. I got some starts going because I was shooting the Con of Wrath, my documentary, which we're trying to wrap up this coming year. TheConOfWrath.com and the Facebook page for that. And, of course, Trekland Trunk and Enterprise in Space is ramping up. My nonprofit, EnterpriseInSpace.org. And I'm about to start our third month of Portal47.net, which has no beginning and no end. You can jump aboard that. And I was just thinking today about how to make sure that among all the lookbacks and the between the cracks kind of aspects of Portal 47, when we take a deep dive, you know, backstage to the 23rd and 24th centuries, what we can do in an evolutionary sense. I wasn't even thinking about we'd be in this position already. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're going to be just, I'm still rolling out components to that. So that's going to be exciting. So go over to portal47.net and see what's up there and jump in with our, we're still kind of in our founding class of members and portal deep divers. So that's fun too. My fan experience for that. So, so that's it. Larry Nemechek's Trekland on Facebook. And Larry Nemechek on Twitter.
Awesome. Well, I would like to take a moment and remind everybody, in case you found the Ready Room for the first time because of the big Star Trek announcement and you found this news post, this is just one of the shows we have here on the Trek FM network. We have 20 different podcasts covering every aspect of Star Trek. We have a dedicated show for every series. We talk about science and music and the creative behind Star Trek and women's issues, fan films, everything. In fact, here's a quick look at some of those things that we talk about here on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Yeah, he can edit the crap out of a movie. Literally. Like, that's actually how he got the job on for Nemesis, is he edited the crap out of Lara Croft, Tomb Raider, and Mission Impossible 2. And they're like, thanks, Stuart Baird.
Earl Grey.
Oh, by the way, 6 hours in, if you press shift, you'll run throughout the whole game.
Press shift when your characters are moving, and they'll actually move at a
reasonable
pace.
The orb.
If he had, like, a game card, his power, you know, like, would be higher than any other captain for their persuasion power.
You'll be like, damn, I was winning, and then he went and played a Cisco card on me.
The Ready Room.
Someone pointed out that this is actually the shortest title of any Star Trek episode. It's shorter than Voyager's Q squared by half a character because the two is superscript.
We're number one. We're number one.
To the journey! It's fake intimacy.
Thank you.
It is them trying to say Chakotay knows Janeway so well that just by fiddling her comm badge, he knows the crap's gonna hit the fan. Commentary, Trek Stars.
Lost World's a terrible movie. I haven't seen Jurassic World, though.
The 602 Club.
We wake up in the middle of the night, and I pop back in episode 5, and I watch it again. Like, there's something about this movie that from even then, you know, I'd seen them all, it's all clean slate, this one was already my favorite.
Literary Treks.
It definitely starts in a very dark place, and it doesn't get much brighter at all, you know, until we get to the end, and you know, there's some hope there, but yeah, definitely it's a dark book.
Women at Warp.
There were no, oh, you're a girl, so you can't do that. It's like, well, you know what? You used to hang out with the Klingons, so let's see what that would look like. Why don't you try that on for a while?
And introducing Meta Treks.
if you're commander of a starship, 1,000 choices are going to confront you in the course of your day in the captain's chair, and you just can't ignore them. So asking ourselves whether we really have free will is just a meaningless question on that view.
I personally would like to be confronted with the choice to warp to Ryza, just saying.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows. We have new content for you daily here at Trek.fm, and you can find that everywhere that you get podcasts. Of course, you can find it in iTunes. If you go to itunes.com/Trek.fm, we are a featured provider with Apple there in the iTunes store. If you're not an Apple user, you can find us on Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, BlackBerry. We're on SoundCloud. You can go to our website, trek.fm, and you can just stream the shows or download the files or get RSS feed links. They're on the website. We make it as easy as we can for you to get our shows, and we hope you'll check them all out. I'd also like to thank our associate producers here on The Ready Room, Renee Roberts and Zachary Fruling, for all of their support. And they support us through Patreon. We are a listener-supported network, and that's how we're able to bring all of those shows to you every day of the week. And if you'd like to find out how you can support us and also take advantage of our special website called Patron Zone, which is filled with all kinds of perks for our patrons, you can find out about that at patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. And I hope you'll check that out and help us keep Star Trek discussion going. Now, if you'd like to find me, I'd love to talk to you about this announcement today and other things about Star Trek. You can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. That's also my username on Facebook and pretty much everywhere. You can also find me in the Babel Conference on Facebook. That's our listeners discussion group. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the search field on Facebook and it'll come right up. It is a closed group, so you need to click join and we'll let you right in. And we have well over 800 listeners just in that group on Facebook who are talking about Star Trek every day. We have wonderful discussions there. And then elsewhere on the network, you can find me on The Orb with Matthew Rushing. We talk exclusively Deep Space Nine on that show. I also do Hyper Channel, which I mentioned a few times during the show today. That's a new show. It's usually short, but today we did a really long one, almost as long as this Ready Room here. And I was joined by Matthew Rushing, Norm Lau, and Mike Schindler, all from the network here. And we talked about this topic, the new Star Trek series, but from a little bit different angle than Larry and I did today. So go check that out as well. It's a great supplement to our discussion today. You can find that by just searching for Hyper Channel in iTunes or any of those other sources, or go to trek.fm/hyperchannel/80, and that will get you to that episode. That's Hyper Channel episode 80. And then lastly, if you would like to read my writing about Star Trek, you can find that on the official website at startrek.com. Of course, you can find Larry's writing there as well. Well, Larry, I'm going to let you go. I'm going to wander off and start working on my scripts for this new show.
Oh, that's good. That's good, Chris. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to stick a new series in it, finally, because The Ready Room is done.